everyone. This is Jerry Pippin, and welcome to our UFO program. We open it with a sad note. Bud Hopkins has passed away. He was 80 years old, born June 15th back in 1931, and died August 21st, 2011. We have a note here that I'm going to read, and it's from Leslie Kane. She says, "I'm very sad to announce that Bud Hopkins died August 21st at 1:35 p.m. Bud had been under hospice care for about 3 weeks. He was at his home in New York. The combination of liver cancer and pneumonia led to his death. His daughter, Grace Hopkins Lessel, and I were with him almost continuously during the last 3 weeks. He was not in any pain, and he received the best possible care and loving support from those closest to him." She wrote this late on Sunday. "Today, he gradually slipped away and simply, quietly stopped breathing. He died peacefully and without a struggle. Grace's husband, Andrew, and myself were at his side. Thanks to all of you for being such strong supporters of this extraordinary man, who has contributed so much to our lives in so many different ways." Signed, Leslie Kane. We're going to do a little salute, a tribute to Bud Hopkins. We're going to play some of the interviews we've done with him over the years. And we're going to start with one that we did at Sunset Station in Las Vegas. And it was back in 2004, maybe 2003 even. And I can remember it as clear as today. Bud came running up to the table and said, "I've got about 30 minutes here. Let's do an interview." So we did. It only lasted about 18 minutes, but it was a very informational interview, especially at the time. He talked about something that I was not even aware of, and I thought I knew almost everything about New Mexico UFO crashes. So let's listen to that interview, and you'll see what I'm talking about. The late, great Bud Hopkins. And we have Bud Hopkins with us. And Bud, your new book is going places.
Well, it's called Sight Unseen. And it's the first book I've written in a lot of years. I've written 4 books in 28 years. So I'm not exactly a prolific writer. But I never write anything until I have some new material that has never been made part of the public record, really, in terms of aspects of the abduction phenomenon haven't been studied.
Yeah, Larry Dickin, our UFO producer, went over to Staten Island when you unveiled the book, and you actually wrote this in cooperation with your wife, correct?
Right. Carol Rainey, my wife, is a filmmaker and a writer, and she had no interest in the subject of UFOs when we first met. And she began doing very careful research and going back into the history of the phenomenon, reading Donald Kehoe and, you know, all the early writers and so forth, and got totally fascinated. And she was a filmmaker who had done a lot of medical films and science films for the New England Research Institute. So she started getting interested in the science that's going on today in our culture that is somehow similar to the kinds of science that apparently the UFO occupants can carry out. And so what it turns out is that the distance between alien science and human science is shrinking. So what we're really trying to do with this book is to take the para out of paranormal.
And it's an incredible read. But now, you talked about something here at this conference here in Las Vegas that I was not aware of at all, and that was an Albuquerque crash of what, 1963, of a UFO.
Right. I'm not a...
this is different from what you've been doing.
Right.
You know, my first question, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but my first question is, how come you got interested in this?
Yeah. Interested in this particular...
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, this case sort of fell into my lap, Jerry. It was really a situation where a woman I'd worked with who'd had abduction experiences befriended this elderly lady at a conference, at a MUFON meeting, and this woman happened to tell her about this weird experience she had had. That's why she finally decided to seek out the MUFON or something. And when she told this woman friend of hers about the fact that she had actually handled three alien bodies as a medical technician in a small hospital, this particular friend of mine, who she was talking to, called me right away and said, "But I think you ought to give this lady a call and get into this case." So I looked into it just because it sort of fell into my lap.
Now, to give a little background, the crash happened near Albuquerque. The state police were even involved.
Right. This happened in 1963, and the background is that this medical technician worked at a very small hospital in a town probably 90 miles from Albuquerque. And as a medical technician, part of her job was to ride in the ambulance to accidents and whatever illnesses. And one day they got a call that there was an accident in the location. That was all they were told by the dispatcher. And they hopped in the ambulance, went out, and found two state police cars in this field with just two state policemen, and in the background some kind of wreckage. And when they drove up and got out of the ambulance, there were three small bodies on the ground. And this woman said, the medical technician, to the police officer, "Where are their parents?" And he said, "No, there aren't any parents." He said, "I don't know what we've got here." And ultimately, she began to look at the bodies for vital signs, see if they were still living. There had been a fire in this crash. They were burnt. But when she realized that they were deceased, she began to realize these were extremely strange and basically not human beings.
They were what, the little gray type or what?
These were, well, see, the skin was outside was sort of scorched, but they were small, she thought between 3 and 4 feet tall, maybe closer to three and a half feet. They were, they had small bodies, of course, long arms, and she said they were wearing some kind of coverall thing, and she didn't know what it was, but it had an incredible hardness. They couldn't cut through it easily. They had to get a knife to get to the flesh to see if there was a pulse or anything. But the most important thing about this is that they packed up the three bodies, she did, with the driver of the ambulance, and took them back to the hospital. So here she is riding. This is the only woman I've ever heard of, was riding in an ambulance with three alien bodies, and who was actually in charge of handling them. Takes them into the X-ray room and X-rays the bodies. And after she studies the X-rays, and the doctor is called to, and he pronounces them dead. She because she didn't think they were human, she didn't know whether there would be some vital sign that she'd missed. The doctor, only one doctor at this hospital, pronounced them dead on arrival. And within a very short time, the Air Force arrived. Now, she had already taken X-rays of all three bodies, and she said that she could get the entire torso down to into the pelvis on a 14-inch pallet, which shows that you're dealing with a very small body. And so, at any rate, they were.
Now, the Air Force showed up. They took the bodies, I guess.
The Air Force showed up. They had a couple of command cars. They had a flatbed truck. They went and got the wreckage from the craft, cleaned up the site. It was under tarpaulin. It was not a big object. This is fairly small. And then came back to the bodies, and they were warned, and incidentally, the bodies were taken, the X-rays were taken, her trip ticket with the information on where they...
Don't tell me, they took that too.
Every single object. She had made a couple of notes that was taken, and the Air Force colonel said, "This never happened, you never saw this, you were never to speak about this, and remember, the government has a long arm." and they were quite frightened. Now, the other thing that's interesting is the ambulance had meanwhile been parked back in the garage where it's kept. The Air Force descended on the garage, got into the back of the ambulance, and took out every single thing they could find, sheets and whatever there was. And when I interviewed the widow of the ambulance driver, he's deceased for a number of years, she's quite elderly. She said we were never paid for any of the things the Air Force took. We were never paid for the trip. They took our sheets. They took our stuff from the back. And, of course, the ambulance driver apparently never even told his wife about this, because I guess the warnings were so stiff that he was a little frightened to include her in this. But at least she was able to testify, and we have that on film, that the Air Force ransacked the ambulance.
Now, the interesting thing about when you came on the scene and started investigating this with this medical technician, did I understand or misunderstand? Has she had an abduction experience?
We thought that there was a possibility, but that's still very uncertain as to whether she had ever had an experience like that. But so that's a kind of a moot point at this point. Now, she was an elderly lady, and when we I would try to do some hypnosis to help her remember some more details, even the name of the officer or something that gave her the warning, and it wasn't terribly successful.
I was very interested in your medical story about in New York, where they actually have some medical evidence now of maybe an abduction.
Well, that's an extremely important case. That's the Jim Mortellaro case. And this happened over a year ago. But the basic point of that case was that this man who holds two Ph.D. degrees and is a very successful businessman, his conscious memory is that he got in his car to drive out of the garage to go to visit a friend in the hospital, and apparently a second later decided that they had forgotten something. And he pulled back into the garage a second later. And when he went into the house, his wife said, "Where have you been?" It's 11 o'clock at night, and it was a whole period of missing time. And he was feeling extremely strange, as she noticed suddenly that there was blood on the front of his trousers and on his face. And she said, "What happened to you? Were you in an accident?" And at that point, he passed out. And when he woke up, he was on the table in the emergency room. And he was bleeding from the bladder. And the doctor that was his personal physician had shown up at the hospital. And the lucky thing is that he had been talking to his doctor for several years about his suspicion that he was having abduction experiences. So the doctor was extremely interested in this. And they did the next morning, they kept him in the hospital overnight, but the next morning they did a procedure called a cystoscopy, which is to insert a viewing tube in the urethra. And they found that the bladder was severely abraded. Now, this is something that you don't do to yourself.
You're absolutely right.
This is something that's done by some external force. And the doctor, one of the doctors who spoke to me about this, said that it looked like a botched cystoscopy. That was her reading on the damage that was done. But at any rate, this was the beginning of an entire long, complex story. He could not remember where this took place, but under the control of the doctors, he was given a kind of chemical regression. They gave him a mixture of chemicals which helped him remember what happened. And he remembered the abduction and the fact that some instrument had been inserted in his urethra in the craft, and that it had been extraordinarily painful. He remembered what the creatures looked like. There was one who sort of was in charge and asked for this to be done to him, apparently, by one of the smaller grays. But this figure was a tall, praying mantis-looking creature, and which we get in numerous cases. And it's a very interesting thing, Jerry, that when you get these different physical types described, the praying mantis type, or as opposed to the regular grays, or some that are look half human and half alien. They're all cooperating at the same time, doing the same thing. So they're not. It isn't as if you have one ship with one tide coming in and doing something and another.
So they're integrated.
They're certainly integrated. Yeah. It's also not a very democratic thing because it's very hierarchical, and the small grays seem to do the schlep work, and the taller gray seems to be in charge, in this case, the praying mantis type. But at any rate, Jim could not, they didn't get into where this happened, even though he could remember the abduction and how he was taken aboard. So what happened, I did a hypnotic regression with him a little later, and he was able, under very careful questioning and procedures, to remember where he was driving, even though he was driving at that point under alien control. I mean, he didn't know why he was making a right turn at such and such a street and a left turn at such and such. But we got a complete itinerary, and subsequently, with a video cameraman in the back seat, we went to the site, found the streets are there just as he'd remembered, and drove up and found the field where he'd driven his car right off the road into a field. And there were the tire tracks showing where he drove. And there was even a piece of the underside of his car, something having to do with the air vent, that had fallen off and was right there at the site. And he picked it up.
Well, that's a pretty good verification. Of course, the name of the new book is Sight Unseen, and we're talking with Bud Hopkins here. And, Bud, one thing I have to ask you before we leave here is, it's a long time from the first time you wrote that first book about abductions and you call them transgenic beings now, right?
Well, my wife is the scientist in the group, and so she was reading the genetic experimentation that's going on. What she realized is that our idea of a hybrid, which is, you know, the way you produce a donkey or so.
Right. Well, originally we talked about that.
As a hybrid, for want of a better term, it's not the precise thing that's happening. What they are doing is inserting genes of one species into another. It's not the same as a sexual mix where you take an ovum from one species and sperm from the other. This is not what seems to be happening. When I wrote Intruders, I called introduced for the first time what is actually going on here in terms of the alien agenda to produce quote-unquote hybrid beings or transgenic beings. I call them hybrids just as a shorthand. It's kind of almost a general term nowadays. But Carol, being a stickler now from having studied the genetic issues, wanted to call them transgenic beings, so that was the term she used.
Well, I think you made the sale, because every time I start talking about the subject when we're lining up shows, Larry Dickin tells me they're not hybrids, Jerry. They're transgenic beings.
Well, that's being a careful stickler for this. But in other words, you make a hybrid in the case of a donkey, as I said, by combining a sperm and ovum from two different species. But this is not what seems to be happening. And right now, as we know,
somewhat like a gene splicing.
Yes, it's a gene splicing. And as you know now, there have been some outrageous things done where, as in the most famous case, a gene from a salmon has been inserted into a tomato plant, so tomatoes are able to bear the cold better. Now, we're going from animal to vegetable here. So the idea that when I wrote Intruders and was attacked by a lot of scientists saying this is impossible, can't ever happen, so on and so forth. Well, it's happening. And in a certain sense, I feel very pleased that having...
You should feel vindicated.
I do. And I feel that having stuck by the data, the actual information, rather than going by, going by the theories that were being thrown in my face, theories never trump data. And so by hanging in there with the data has proved to be supported really by the gene splicing and the engineering that's going on right now.
These hybrids or these transgenic beings, they started a long time ago, and they're adults now, and they're with us, evidently.
That's the subject of the whole second half of the book. Are these people, at least some of them, existing on Earth amongst us, driving cars, holding jobs, eating at McDonald's or whatever, I don't know. Is that happening? And I feel there's definite evidence that it is happening to some extent. And we have many, many case reports in the book. I know it's probably the most controversial thing one could possibly bring up, but I stuck my neck out, but I believe that this is in fact going on.
Is there any way you think we can tell who is who?
Well, that, Jerry, I don't know. You know,
do you think they even know?
That's a very interesting question, and there's a possibility there that there may be some confusion. I don't really know. These are the tough new questions. Every time you open a door in the subject, you found enough information to open the door, you find that there are a million more doors behind that and a million more questions to ask. And what we're trying to do is to find the answers to these questions. And what you just asked is an excellent and very important question.
Bud Hopkins, the book is Sight Unseen. It's always a pleasure to see you, and have a nice trip back to New York City.
Thank you very much, Greg. Great to be with you again.
Always good to have you, and in person, it's a special delight.